Hello there, and welcome into another edition of The Intersection with conversation about a variety of topics, including news, information, and lifestyles, approached from a Christian worldview perspective. First, you'll be hearing from Shelley Rushing Tomlinson of All Things Southern, who offers some discussion on topics related to food and faith. She's released a new book that consists of recipes and more. Then it's Cindy Fiesel, whose husband died a number of years ago. He suffered from concussions and his life took on a downward spiral prior to his death. You'll hear about her journey and her reliance on faith in God. Plus, Catherine Hines of Hines Ugandan Ministries talked with me recently about the call of God on her life, her response to it, and how God is using her ministry to reach children and others in the nation of Uganda. And on this edition of The Intersection, a former Miss Mississippi, Miss America Top 10 finalist, and American Idol finalist visited the studios of Faith Radio recently. Jasmine Murray also has a Christian album coming out in 2017. You'll hear a portion of that in-studio conversation. Finally, Malcolm Yarnell of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, the co-editor of a book encompassing a variety of authors covering aspects of the topic of religious liberty. This is The Intersection, a production of The Meeting House. I'm Bob Crittenden. Shelley Rushing Tomlinson of All Things Southern is an author, speaker, and media host. She has an appreciation for cooking as well. She talked with me recently about her book, Hungry is a Mighty Fine Sauce, Recipes and Ramblings from the Belle of All Things Southern, which features not only recipes, but also includes inspiration through stories and more. Here now is Shelley Tomlinson.
This is, we would say around here, a different sort of animal, this cookbook. We call it a storytelling cookbook is how we have decided to define it. And how it came to be, I've done recipes on my website and on my radio show for, you know, this whole entire time, all these many years, and my readers were asking me to put together a cookbook. And honestly, I was a little hesitant about it early on because I'm not a classically trained chef or that type of a Food Network chef, and I'm just a home cook. You know, I cook with ingredients you can actually find in the supermarket, and, you know, you don't have to spend the entire day in the kitchen. And so my publisher really enticed me into it when she gave me carte blanche to do what you just observed, to put everything that it is that I love and do here at All Things Southern between the covers. So although it is a cookbook, it has 125 recipes, 80 full-color glossy photographs, she also gave me just privilege to put my humor and my storytelling in it and to sprinkle my faith throughout the book. So that did it for me. I love that concept, and I got hard at work on it, and Hungry as a Mighty Fine Sauce was born.
Obviously, God has given you a platform, and you talk about a variety of different things through your website and on the radio, but faith is a foundation for you. Talk about how faith is really integrated into what you do, and of course, that would include this cookbook.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was raised in church, Bob. I'm the granddaughter of a Southern Baptist preacher. My dad was a deacon, is still a deacon his whole entire life in the little church that I grew up in. I was in church 9 months before I was born and thereafter. You know, I've been churched, but I was probably mid-20s with children of my own before I really found a passionate relationship with Christ myself, before my faith became my own and not something I had inherited. And that story is one I'll go to the ends of the earth to tell, because I know from feedback with audiences and from the ladies' retreats that I do how many people there are that are quote-unquote serving in a church, you know, trying to do the right thing, but they have never tasted the goodness of the Lord themselves, and they're not in pursuit of Him on a daily basis. And there's no comparison, and because I've done life both ways, had I not found my faith, my personal relationship with the Lord, I'd still be doing the thing, Bob, because it's how I was raised. I'd be going to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, prayer meeting, you know, revival services, vacation Bible school, all those things I would still be doing those things because it's how I was raised, but with devoid of the personal relationship that sustains me and fuels me and drives everything I do. And so when I speak about that, I do not come from a way of, shame on you, church lady, for not loving Christ passionately, but instead it's a place of empathy and sympathy because I know that place, and I just want to come alongside people and help them discover the richness of Christ for themselves.
Shelley Rushing Tomlinson here on The Intersection. Find out more by going to the website Bell, B-E-L-L-E, of allthingssouthern.com. Well, Cindy Feasel joined me recently. She is the author of the book, After the Cheering Stops, an NFL wife's story of concussions, loss, and the faith that saw her through. She shared a portion of her story involving her husband of 29 years who suffered concussions while in the NFL and the faith challenges she faced. Here now is Cindy Feasel.
When it's a slow fade and someone is drifting away, if it's not a huge, bold sign, if there hadn't been an incident happen, how are you to know? So I just kind of went along with different things that he would say that I would think that weren't exactly like him. But 8 years prior to his retirement, he had a serious staph infection that would have been career ending for anyone, I think, really, because it was so severe that he had a port where an antibiotic was put into his system directly. So it was very, very serious. I remember then thinking, gee, he's going to retire now and that'll be it. And eventually, I got the message loud and clear that he wasn't thinking about retiring, and he still wanted to play. And he did play. He had 8 great years after that, and he played. He was the starting center for the Seattle Seahawks, so it was a lot of good years for him. But during those years, he came in with little pills along the way that I didn't really know what they were. But he would say, "You know, I'm not sleeping good at night, and I'm in a lot of pain, and everything hurts." And he was also bringing alcohol into the house, which was, again, not unusual, but yet at the same time, he was drinking it all and then taking it out to the trash in the morning when he left to go to work, or taking it out that night before he went to bed. So it was different. It was odd behavior, let's put it that way. That started happening around those times. And then when he retired, I just said the other day, I thought about this story that he gave me a diamond ring after he retired, and I opened it up and I looked at it and I went, "This is the same ring you gave me a few years ago." So it was unusual things like that that told me that something was going on with him and not okay.
Cindy, let's talk about the faith element of your life and Grant's life. What sort of presence was the Lord in your home?
Well, always, because Grant and I were both Christians, and we raised our family in a Christian environment. Our kids went to Christian schools. We always went to church. We met at a Christian college, so definitely the Lord was always, something that was talked about in our home and our life, and we very much believed in God and raised our family to believe in God.
Mm-hmm. As things began to unravel and as you began to observe some of this unusual behavior in Grant's life, how was faith important to you during those very difficult and, I would say, uncertain times?
Yes. Well, I'm just going to tell you that God was my lifeline, because I wasn't talking to anyone else. And my message, part of it is saying, of course, God is always the answer and God should always be the one we call on. But please have a lifeline to someone on earth. Talk to a friend, talk to a family member, talk to a counselor, someone that can give you guidance and help you. I did not do that. I was always talking to God, but I wasn't always talking to someone else. And so God was my salvation. I mean, he definitely kept, I think, continuing to tell me that I could make it through, that I was going to get to the other side of this, and that he was always going to be there with me and beside me. And, I just remember crying out so many nights saying, "God, help me." So I have a whole lot of journals with just prayers and cries and poems that I wrote to God just saying, "I need you, help me." So I am completely convinced that God is the only reason why I'm still here, because at one point I thought, you know, maybe we were both going to die. I knew Grant was in addictions and that he was killing himself, but at one point when everything got so dark, and I say it was a free fall into the darkness, I could have easily gone that way too. And I remember thinking maybe it would be better if I just died too. So I know that God saved me for this reason. I believe that it's my destiny to have written this book. I think it's a supernatural path that I've been on to get to this point where I'm on the radio with you. I know that God lit the way all the way for this book to be written, and I did it without having any idea that there were other people out there that felt the same way as me, because I hadn't had any conversations with any other women or any other men who'd been through something similar to this. So I did it all on faith, and I know that God knew that it needed to be done. I even think now that, you know, it says in Psalms 139 that God knew us at conception, and I think that I met Grant and married Grant because I could complete his legacy. I could talk about his story.
Cindy Feasel here on The Intersection. Learn more by going to Cindy Feasel, that's CYNDYFEASEL.com, or after the cheering stops.com. Well, Catherine Hines is founder and Uganda director of Hines Ugandan Ministries. Recently, she shared about God's call upon her life and the ministry that he has given her in Uganda. She has co-written a book called They Call Me Mama Catherine, How One Woman's Brokenness Became Hope for Uganda's Children. This is Catherine Hines now.
Well, I first went there under an organization called the Africa Christian Training Institute, and they sent me in a number of places in Uganda. And my heart stayed in Kamankole. So when I went back in 95 to live in Kamankole, I began with a small group of kids with a Saturday Sunday school, which was something I'd seen done in New York with Bill Wilson and Mission to America. And we started meeting on Saturdays under a tree, a cashew nut tree, and there was just a small group, but it began to grow over the years. Today it's our Awana clubs, and we have 1,500 kids. But as God kept me there and I looked at orphanages and what other people were doing, I studied that for about 4 years and the culture and what works and what doesn't work. And in the meantime, did church planting and a lot of evangelism. I realized the situation of the kids was worse than I ever thought it would be. And God just kept guiding me. And finally, we started a sponsorship program with nine of the children in 1999 when we started Hines Ugandan Ministries. And from there, it has grown to around 300 kids at all times. We've had many kids that have finished the program. As they finish, we bring in new ones.
Tell me what you found to be some of the challenges that you face and how you were able to deal with them.
I think a lot of the challenges I've seen, one of them was polygamy. I didn't expect to find that. I guess I should have done my homework a little more. People having AIDS and then having more than one wife and very many children they can't support, it was hard to get used to. Some of their beliefs and suspicions were difficult, and then witch doctors. There's a number of people who practice witchcraft, and I didn't expect that kind of opposition. I knew there'd be opposition, but I didn't expect it to be that bad. A lot of missionaries wouldn't go to the area where I am because they said there was too much witchcraft. And I talked with many mission agencies when they first went over there those first 4 years. So those were things that I didn't expect to be up against, but God has been leading me in that area as well. We've had several witch doctors come to Christ and give their lives to Christ, and we have some of their children sponsored, and we see a big difference in those homes. It's such a big difference. Mm. You see the love of Christ there.
Well, you mentioned polygamy and witchcraft. Talk about the interaction that you've had with Islam in that region.
Islam has grown faster than any other religion in Uganda. It's gone from 5% to almost 20%. But the kind of Islam we have, most of them are like a cultural Islam. They're not what we would call the serious, not the jihadist type. most of them will allow you to come in the home and share with them. But we have had cases where they don't, where they really do not want us anywhere near them. We've had problems when we've done open-air crusades where they've come and wanted to to stop us and cause problems. And we've had some that, like we had one son who came to Christ when he was 17. But to me, they're all sons and daughters. And they threw him out of the house because he was a Muslim. And we ended up taking him into the orphanage to live. But that was really hard. But to this day, we praise God because now the son has led the mother to Christ. So the father still wants nothing to do with it. And he threw the wife out. So you run into those kinds of problems when you find the really serious Islam. And it is growing all the time. And then there was a government leader who tried to cause me a lot of problems, but he's now retired, no longer in government, but had a lot of issues there. And they do try to cause problems. They feel it's their duty to cause problems for Christians.
Catherine Hines here on The Intersection. Find out more by going to the website hineskids.org. Well, this is The Intersection Podcast, a weekly production of The Meeting House. Find out more through the website meetinghouseonline.info. You'll find a link there to the download center marked Meeting House On Demand. Plus, through that site, you can subscribe to The Intersection and have it delivered to your podcast receiving software, including iTunes, on a weekly basis. Two blogs can be found as well. One is The Three, with three stories of relevance to the Christian community. The other is The Front Room, with devotional thoughts and commentary. Also, you can follow me on Twitter and access the Meeting House Facebook page. Video content is accessible also. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Well, Jasmine Murray is a former American Idol finalist from season 8. She's also 2014's Miss Mississippi. She visited the Faith Radio studios recently to talk about her life, her faith in God, and her album project scheduled for a 2017 release. From that conversation, this is Jasmine Murray.
It was a top 13, our season, and they kind of changed it up, you know, from season to season. So actually, Jorge Nunez and I were eliminated together that season. So, yeah, we had like a double elimination, and then the top 10 went on tour. So, but it was awesome. I was one of the wild cards that season, and so the judges actually saved me and gave me a second chance because I was originally eliminated completely. So very, very thankful that I got, you know, one more shot at it.
It's got to be nerve-wracking.
It was. It was, you know, but it was also, I mean, for me, just, I mean, to make it on American Idol, I'm from Columbus, Mississippi. I was 16 years old. And, you know, just I wanted the opportunity so badly. So even be on the American Idol stage was a dream come true. So.
Oh, absolutely. The special season.
Complain.
Now, you also have the distinction of being Miss Mississippi for 2014, which meant that you competed in the Miss America pageant, the Miss America 2015 pageant, and you were actually a top 10 finalist in that.
I was. Oh, my goodness. Man. I mean, just crazy experience again. I mean, I grew up watching my older sister compete for the title of Miss Mississippi. So, you know, when the roles were reversed and she was watching me on stage, it was just so crazy. But, you know, my entire family has been so supportive and we all support each other, which is the really great thing about it. But being able to represent the state of Mississippi was a complete honor. And of course, competing at Miss America is every little girl's dream, you know, and so that was definitely an amazing experience. And then coming back home and getting to represent the state and meet people, you know, from all over and travel was such a great experience.
What has been the most intense moment of anticipation? Learning whether or not you would be Miss Mississippi, learning whether or not you made the top 10 at Miss America, or learning whether or not you go on to a Miss American Idol?
Miss America was probably very nerve-wracking just because everything, and it's hard because both of them are on live television, you know.
Oh, yes.
I mean, during both processes of elimination, you know, you're completely on stage, you know, cameras everywhere, and so you don't know what's going to happen. But honestly, in all of those situations, I was very at peace with it because I knew whether or not I made the top 10 at Miss America or whether or not I went on with American Idol or won Miss Mississippi that year, I knew that God had a plan for everything. And I've always said that. I've always said everything happens for a reason. And no matter what happens, you know, God has a plan for all of it. So I was completely content in those moments. And, you know, I remember my third time, that was my third time competing at Miss Mississippi. And I told myself, you know what, I'm not going to put pressure on myself about this. I've done everything I can do. And the rest is in the hands of the judges and God. So at the end of the day, I felt good about it. So, yeah, they were all, you know, those moments of like, well, I hope I get it. But at the same time, even if I didn't, even if I don't, then, you know, I'll be okay. And that means God has something else for me.
Well, something you said, and I think this could be very helpful and inspiring for listeners. When you talk about God's plan for you and following God's plan, obviously you're a Christian. You're someone who allows your faith to really inform the decisions that you make. Talk about your recognition of God having a plan for you through these various competitions.
Definitely. Well, like I said, I think, you know, I've always, music has always been a huge part of me. And so I really just felt like I wanted to take every opportunity I could to sing and to grow and to become better at that. And so, you know, whether it was in pageantry or whether it was through American Idol, you know, I felt like God has taken me through these different seasons for a reason. And, you know, after Idol, I was focusing more on pop, and I thought that was what I wanted to do at 16, and it was great. But you know, after that experience, you know, God revealed to me, I think, that his ultimate plan was for me to, you know, realize that and get those experiences for them to translate into today and to help me to realize, you know, this is where he really wanted me, and this is where I'll be able to completely use my gifts for, you know, his glory and his purpose. And so yeah, I think that it's all about realizing that he does have a plan and tapping into that and consulting him and saying, you know, God, what do you want me to do? Because it's not always, you know, super apparent, but we have to ask him. And so I definitely have, and I've sought him through all of this time, and I feel like this is definitely where he wants me.
Jasmine Murray here on The Intersection. Find out more through the website jasminemurrayofficial.com. Finally, on this edition of The Intersection podcast, it's Malcolm Yarnell, professor of systematic theology, director of the Center for Theological Research, and director of the Oxford Study Program at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. In our conversation, he talked about matters concerning religious liberty. He's co-editor of the revised and updated edition of the book, First Freedom, The Beginning and End of Religious Liberty. This is Malcolm Yarnell now.
Let me first of all just kind of take us back to where we get our modern conceptions of freedom and human rights. The fact is that human rights developed in the Western world as a response to our basic Judeo-Christian beliefs. And the concept that centers all of our freedoms is the idea of liberty of conscience. And the fact is that this is a theological concept that says that every human being must account for himself or herself before God for what he or she has done, believed in this life. And so out of that basic conviction that every human being is personally responsible for themselves, and that the conscience is the contemporary recognition that we are personally responsible, we had to find in the early modern period that the Anabaptists and the Baptists and others had to argue that the state has no right to determine what we personally believe. And because of this, and because these ideas were put forth in print and in the attempt together and to worship God, these other liberties of press and of speech and of assembly, they actually fold out of the idea of liberty of conscience, also known as religious liberty. And so all of the basic human freedoms that we recognize and cherish today, the foundation of them is in this, what we call the first freedom. And it's because it is the first freedom that is recognized in the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution.
And it's very interesting. I shared an observation with you, and I wanted to unpack it just a bit in following what evangelical Christian leaders have been saying leading up to the election. While we are unified as believers in Christ, there certainly has not been unified thought with respect to the election and how Christians should approach the election. But there is a unity that, from a public policy standpoint, that religious liberty should be on the forefront. So moving forward, as we continue to evaluate the results of the presidential election last week, how strong of a force do you think that the preservation of religious liberty was with respect to how people voted last week, especially people of faith?
Well, I do think that people of faith voted out of concern for humanity and for human consciences. I think there were various ways that many of these Christians, including authors to this volume, voted. But I think that what drove each of them was the concern for the human being and the value of the human being. I cannot speak for the other authors, and I know that some of them lined up one way, some of them lined up another way. But I think that if you were to speak to evangelical Christians across the board, what you would discover is this great concern for the value of human life. And human conscience. And so this has been a part of the struggle for us, because on the one hand, I think you had a lot of people that were concerned for, you know, the value of the human being who is in the womb. And for many others and the same people, the value of the human being who has a different ethnicity, or the value of the human being who is an immigrant. And so all of us are concerned for humanity. I think we saw different threats coming from different directions, but I think all of us agree that one of the greatest threats that we face is that there are legislators, there are executives, there are judges who do not respect our basic rights. And it has become increasingly evident, especially in the last 8 years.
Malcolm Yarnell here on The Intersection. Learn more through his Twitter feed at @MYarnell. Well, that just about wraps up this edition of The Intersection Podcast, the weekly production of The Meeting House. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Through that website, you will find a link to the download center marked Meeting House On Demand, through which you can listen to, download, or share full conversations with recent guests on the Intersection podcast. You can also subscribe to the Intersection through that website and get connected to two blogs. Plus, you can follow me on Twitter and access the Meeting House Facebook page. Video content is accessible also, including two in-studio performances of songs from Jasmine Murray. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Thanks for joining me. I'm Bob Crittenden.